Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be if the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Every Tuesday at 11 a.m., Blake Bedingfield, who joins us each week to scout the Titans' previous game, look ahead to their next matchup. Blake was a Titan scout for 19 years through the 2017 NFL draft, and for six seasons, he was the team's director of college scouting. He joins us right now here in person in Hendersonville. Blake, and how are you, man?
We will talk about Corey Davis and A.J. Brown here. You want to go through every catch? Can read it.
Yeah, paulkoharski.com. That's
line
right.
Line by line.
Blake, what's up, man?
Hey, I'm doing great. What a great store this hook.
You're always
store.
Great about coming on the road, and we appreciate that. That's a lot of extra effort.
Well, yeah, but as you walk around, you're right.
It's a cool. Out of here with a few things.
I picture Blake walking out of here with a kayak on his shoulder.
Well, I'm looking at a fishing pole right now, and I got some great advice.
So, whenever we're out on the road, especially places like this with outdoor gear, hats, pullovers, shoes, cups, whatever. Paul normally leaves with something. So
he's got to buy something.
Chad, should we make a little extra money Kirby. When we come on the road? And oftentimes when we're in a good store like this, I leave at a deficit.
Yeah, so the three of us, before Paul got here, went around with our camera. And we
made that prediction.
We selected an item that we think he'll leave here with
no
today.
Question. I can see that.
So we'll see what happens at 2 o'clock.
If you'd like to play this game also, you can.
Yeah,
next
yeah.
break. Just yes. roll around and tell us what you think Paul will buy.
Well, let me go in the kids' section.
We like to start broad and then narrow. So, obviously, the difference from Jacksonville to Atlanta was extreme. If you start at 30,000 feet, what was the transformation?
You know, what you saw Jacksonville do to the Titans is really what the Titans did to Atlanta. This was a team that was focused and ready to play when they got there. The match of scores that Atlanta had to the Titans didn't stop them one bit, didn't stop their game plan, didn't stop the execution. Even when, you know, Atlanta went right down and put that touchdown on the board, the Titans weren't fazed. And that's what you want to see. You want to see a team that's going to fight for four quarters. And I think that was the big difference in this game. Obviously, a different little game plan than they've had in the past, starting with the opening play of the game with a pass and really hit a lot of big passes in the middle of the field. Took advantage of Keon O'Neill, their really top-notch safety being out of the game. And that was a big difference in the game.
How much do you think, just a quick aside, Cyprian helps them? Obviously, they needed some help.
For those, yeah, we haven't mentioned that today. Cyprian traded to Atlanta from Philly in exchange for their linebacker, Duke Riley.
You know, I think it'll help. It'll bring a veteran presence. I mean, they noticed that in that game. There were a lot of blown coverages, especially on the safety side. But what you saw, too, is really soft coverage in the middle of the field. Receivers were running free, wide open, and Keon O'Neill doesn't usually allow that. He has the speed and athleticism to match a bigger wide receiver. Cyprian's not going to be that matchup cover-type safety that Keon O'Neill can be, but he can bring a veteran presence and be a little bit better in the box as a run defender, which they didn't have this past week.
Blake, the two wins came with extra time to prepare. Of course, week one, you have the entire offseason. And then after the Thursday night game, the extra weekend. What does that tell you about this staff, first off? Because we saw this last year, too. And do they reevaluate that process moving forward, trying to stay more consistent in that overall plan of what they're doing?
You know, I think
anything to that?
I think the extra days not only allows a team to kind of take a deep breath. When you play on Sunday, you're usually going in Sunday night, Monday morning, and you're ready to go on the next game plan. When you play on a Thursday or have a two-week bye, you have a time to self-evaluate and see the things that are going right for your team and the things that aren't working. Take out those plays on offense that you're really not having a lot of success with right now and go back to what your quarterback can do. Go back to using the players and the skill sets that they have correctly, which really showed up this past week. So having that extra time, not only from the healing process from the players, but really from the coach's angle, they can really take a deep breath and reevaluate what they're doing right and enhance that going into that following week.
What do you think they saw from Marcus that got the most out of him in this matchup as they reevaluated what they were doing?
You know, I thought a lot of pre-snap reads. What I saw is a lot of motion with the wide receivers. You see on the first play of the game, Corey Davis is on the right side of the offense. Marcus motioning to the left. Immediately, Corey Davis is the go-to player on that route. He saw the coverage, saw it was going to be a soft man coverage. It was an off man, which the corner was playing way off of him. It was an easy pitch and catch, and he did that throughout the game, whether it was A.J. Brown, Corey Davis. A couple of times on Adam Humphries, it was more of a man-to-man situation. He knew Adam could beat that inside corner, and he delivered the ball very accurately during the game. But a lot of it was pre-snap reads along with the motion that the offensive coordinator was using. And I think Marcus, even at times, I noticed maybe motioned at times to draw and see what the coverage was. Was it going to be a zone coverage? Was it going to be a man? And then at that time, it was predetermined where he was going.
So you had not seen that in previous weeks?
No, not as efficiently as this week. I think this week was more, you saw a lot more from Marcus. That's what Marcus did at Oregon. Everything at the Oregon offense, or not everything, but a lot of it is pre-snap reads, and he knew where he was going before the ball was snapped. Once the coverage showed itself, he knew exactly where he was going. He did that in this game, and that's why there was very little pressure on him. And in a lot of situations, he was able to deliver the ball quickly.
Two really nice throws, both for touchdowns. The first touchdown, more athleticism from A.J. Brown. The second one for Brown, beautiful pass. Good route, good body lean, toe tap, but great throw. And then the anticipation throw that he made on that route with Corey Davis, just trusting that Davis was going to break outside when he did. Good timing and rhythm. And that was the definition of their offense this week, timing and rhythm in sync, and that led to that touchdown that made it 24-7.
You know, I think on the first one to A.J. Brown, he was able to give A.J. the ball in a situation where he didn't turn him, he didn't
right.
lead him too much.
Yeah. Yeah.
He gave him an opportunity to run after the catch, which A.J. did an excellent job and even showed, you know, in the preseason games that he could do that as well. He has good run vision after the catch, and he showed that being able to elude the four defenders in the middle of the field and still able to score. On the fade route in the corner of the end zone, that was a perfectly thrown ball. A.J. Brown used a little bit of a push-off move, more of a veteran push-off where he didn't extend his arm, but able to get that separation and did a good job of adjusting to the catch in the air. On Corey Davis, the corner tried to undercut and jump that route, missed it, and Corey Davis did a good job of staying concentrated and actually getting upfield after that catch, coming to balance on the sidelines and still able to score. A lot of times, those balls carry you out of bounds, and he was able to come to balance and still get upfield. So those are all three good throws, but also three good catches and by the receiver.
Let's stick with the pass game, and let's go both ways. I thought one of the most interesting things you saw and wrote about was maybe played out before the game in the scouting of, was it John Hussey?
Yep.
The referee of this game and his crew by Vrabel and the staff, who came in knowing that they're not a big pass interference crew and we're probably going to let things be physical in the secondary to the point where you start that way and then play from there based on how they call things. Titans defensive backs, very physical with Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu, Calvin Ridley, and that set a tone, and they got away with certain things that weren't called. Meanwhile, on the other side of the ball, Davis and Brown didn't face that. That's a huge dynamic here.
No question. And when you're facing a Julio Jones who has a mismatch of a speed and physicality to most corners in the league, he is a mismatch. They were able to really, even on the first possession that Atlanta had, there were two throws. Both of those could have been pass interference penalties, one on Malcolm Brown, definitely the third down on Adoree' Jackson. Adoree' Jackson had him wrapped up way before the ball was even thrown. No call. That kind of played into what they were going to do later in the game. They were going to wrap up Julio. They were going to wrap these receivers up and be physical until, you know, Logan Ryan had the one pass interference penalty, and that was just because he didn't get his head around till late, which was an obvious pass interference. But some of those other ones could have easily been called. Other crews have called those consistently in a game, and at that time you have to readjust as a defensive back. In this situation, they didn't have to. I was surprised that the Atlanta Falcons didn't match that physicality. In fact, they were playing more off coverage. Desmond Trufant was playing up, playing man, but very little press. Now, the big physical receivers like a Corey Davis and an A.J. Brown can get off that physical press coverage, especially by a smaller corner like a Trufant. But Isaiah Oliver, one of their corners, actually has good size and length. He rarely got up and pressed, was more worried about the speed, which was kind of surprising. But I think to your point, the Titans used that lack of pass interference calls in this game to their advantage.
That's scouting, right?
And they really frustrated Julio. Julio, Calvin Ridley, those guys are not complainers on the field either. If they get interfered with, they're not one to hoop and holler and get upset. But I think what you see in the way they've the Titans coaches scouted the referees, there were two holding calls on the same defensive lineman. Actually, he had three penalties in the game. Tyler Davison had two holding calls. Those are done on tape before the game is even played. They knew he was a holder on run plays, getting the center and guard away from the hole where a linebacker could shoot in and make the play in the run game. Those were predetermined before. I guarantee the coaches went to the referees and said, you got to watch Tyler Davison. He was called for two holding calls and a hands to the face. So the referees were locked in on that defensive tackle from the Falcons.
Just a side note here for how much we've hit Vrabel for mistakes he's made. This is a huge pre-game win.
Yes.
Yeah, this is something coaches do, and they'll find a tendency. And if the referees are willing to listen to them and eyeball those players during the game, which they obviously did in this one.
Even if it's pass interference with other crews, did it surprise you at all at Adoree Jackson's ability to play physical in that game?
You know, I think he wants to be physical short to intermediate. He usually doesn't get as physical down the field. He wants to run with his speed. But short to intermediate, he likes to get his hands on. Speed players at times, like an Adoree Jackson, they know they have quickness of speed to recover. But their problem is sometimes reading routes and being able to anticipate a route. And so they'll get handsy and a little physical. And Adoree likes to do that. Adoree doesn't lack physicality. He just lacks the size and strength that goes along with that a lot of times. But in this game, he was able to do it. And why not him a receiver up if you have that opportunity?
Thursday Night Football. Rams and Seahawks. Thursday night at 7 on 104.5 The Zone.
Day 180 served up by Wendy's up with the $5 biggie bag. Blake Bettingfield with us as we scout the Tennessee Titans. Nate Davis didn't make a start in this game, but played more snaps than Jamil Douglas. What did you think of the rookie's play at right guard?
You know, I like the way Nate played. He played with a physicality that you want to see, especially in a rookie, especially in guys getting his first action, live action. Wasn't able to play in the preseason game. So this is a guy that he's got a little pop to him in his hands, a little strength. When he punches, he's got a little movement off the line of scrimmage. You know, some of the things you want, he was a little rusty on with some of the games they were running on the inside, some of the twists and stunts. He was a little late to recover at times. But there was actually one tackle in twist, and the end came inside. He was late to recover, but got his hands on him late and was able to punch him out of the gap, which is what you want to see. You know, on the second level, he was a little late to identify the linebacker, but these are all things that the speed of the game right now is fast for him. This is something that would have been figured out in preseason. But overall, liked him a lot more than what I saw out of Jamil Douglas. Ben Jones, in a lot of pass situations, was slanting to his side to kind of eyeball and make sure he was getting the extra help. But there was only one real clear Grady Jarrett overhand swim move and kind of beat him on an inside run play and made a tackle for loss. But other than that, Nate Davis held his own.
Like, help me with this, because I honestly don't understand why they just don't start Nate Davis. Why play Jamil Douglas for the first two series, which ended up being four snaps? They went three and out, or maybe no.
They had a first down pass.
Yeah, had a first down pass. So it was five snaps.
Four, so it would have been seven, I think.
So they end up throw a touchdown on the first play on the second possession, and then Davis enters the game and ends up playing majority of the rest of the time. If they continue with this, why would they continue with this system where Douglas starts and Davis comes off the bench?
I think this was – I would believe this is a one-game deal.
Vrabel made it sound yesterday like it's
– they could go back to what they did.
I don't understand that. I mean, the continuity, the cohesiveness that the offensive line needs. But, you know, it's obvious that Davis is a better player. But they also want to put him in successful situations and, you know, put him in an opportunity where he can be more of a run blocker than a pass protector. That's really his strength right now is run blocking, and he was pretty solid at it. You know, those are things that I think the coaching staff wants to kind of get his feet wet. Not having those preseason games, not being able to
yeah.
to do that. I think it's not a bad approach for a game, maybe two, depending on the opponent. This is going to be a little bit different an opponent from the inside tackle position, defensive tackle wise, than they face in Atlanta. So, you know, it's going to be a different matchup, and personnel wise, it may be better to have Douglas give him a blow every now and then.
Paul, you had mentioned, I think yesterday, and I'd heard this from a friend who asked me the same question, is this a conditioning issue? But I don't think it could be if he's playing more than what your starter was.
I don't see how
playing,
you wouldn't be conditioned right? now. It was indoor and 72 right. degrees. There's no weather. I mean,
conditioning would be fine. Nobody knows the injury he had, but,
right.
you know, it's I wouldn't. They're not putting him out there if he's not healthy and ready to go. So, because you know, you're looking at another injury that could have him done for the year. So, you know, this is something that I think they really just wanted to kind of limit his reps, get him on the sidelines while the offense is on the field and Jamil Douglas is on the field. He can sit right there with the coach and go over things. And there's a lot of mental growing with these young players, especially a third-round draft choice that really wasn't expected to start right off the bat. This is somebody that has to kind of grow into that starting lineup.
What's Buffalo's front bring compared to Atlanta's? What kind of different challenges will he and the rest of the line see?
You're going to have some bigger players up front. Jordan Phillips is a bigger player. Now, they're void of one of their defensive tackles, which is a big loss. But Star Leotelli, this is another big player. Ed Oliver, which is another more fast, three-technique type player. So you've got a little bit different type matchup, but you're going to have those physical run stoppers in a Jordan Phillips and Star Luatelli, which are tough to handle at times, especially for a rookie.
How much does Luan now change things, plugging him back in? You're back to what you intended to be at the beginning. How dramatic a change should we expect?
Well, they're getting their best player on their team back. That's a big change. I don't care what position you play, whether it's left tackle, quarterback, kicker. If the best player on your team is getting back on the field, and you've really been able to avoid the injuries so far to date. You look around the league and everybody's stars are dropping left and right. The Titans have been able to avoid yep. that injury bug. They did have the suspension issue, but not the injury problem. So that is a big plus to have your best player back. He can control the left side, whether it's a Jerry Hughes or a Trent Murphy. Doesn't matter who's going to be rushing this week. Taylor should be able to handle them one-on-one. Won't be a problem.
Was the impact without Lawan over those four games about what you expected?
You know, I think to a point, you never expect a 9-sack game, just like you didn't expect an 11-sack game last year versus the Ravens. Those should never happen. They really should never happen. But they did, and that was a big sack game. But I think for the most part, yes. I mean, when you're going up against some premier pass rushers, whether it's Myles Garrett in the first game and Ngakoue in the Jacksonville game, the Colts were void of a couple of their pass rushers, which was a plus for the Titans having some injuries there. But, yeah, I think you expected that. Dennis Kelly's a backup player, and that's what kind of he provides is a one- or two-game starting opportunity. The more he plays, the more holes you'll see in his game.
Conklin seemed pretty good against Cleveland. Hasn't seemed as good since. How do you assess his first quarter?
You know, I think that's just the way Jack plays. Jack is a solid player. He's not a top-level athlete. He's not an extremely strong player. What he is a technique, fundamental hands, good hand use, good feet, good technique. That's the way he wins. And there are going to be times where he gets off balance and really kind of out of whack based on what the rusher's doing to him. You know, you saw it a little bit in the Cleveland game when Myles Garrett was on that side. You know, you definitely saw it in some of the middle games. You know, Jack's going to have those problems at times. At other times, he looks really good with his pass sets. He looks strong, especially in his lower body where he's had the knee injuries. And he's been really good in the run game.
Malcolm Butler, I thought, had a really nice game. How did they deploy their secondary against what Atlanta was rolling out in the wide receiving court?
You know, this is Malcolm Butler's game, and he wants to be aggressive. He wants to get his hands on defenders. If he doesn't, he gets a little lost at times. You saw him kind of get beat on a comeback route, and he wasn't able to get his hands on and be physical. And he wants to have that physicality when he plays. He plays with an aggressive style. That's always been his game, and he wants to play that, and it's fed right into what he wants to do. I thought he did a good job against Julio. I don't think really anything phases Julio Jones. You saw it a couple of times.
He tried.
Yeah, he tried, and Julio's, you know, patted him on the rear and said, good job, and he kept going. I mean, but that's a pro. But I thought he did a nice job during the game because it played into his skills, played into the way he wants to play the game.
You know, I'm thinking about this concept of the scouting of the officials and knowing that they're not going to call a lot of pass interferences and allowing you to play more physical with receivers and how that helped the Titans. Are the Titans a secondary that if it's the other way, if you scout the officiating crew and there are a lot of pass interference calls, are they in trouble? And if that's the case, is there any secondary really built to handle that in today's NFL if you get that crew that's going to throw a flag for everything?
You know, you have to be a top elite man-to-man cover player, you know, and you have to have the size to go with it. So, yeah, Jalen Ramsey can be that type player. You know, Stephon Gilmore can be that type player. But, you know, I think the Titans will struggle at times when they see a pass interference referee crew, someone that's going to call those handsy type penalties, because that's kind of the nature of the defense. If you notice the Titans defense, they bring a little bit of extra on a tackle.
Yeah.
They bring extra players around the ball, which is what you want to see in a defense, but they're kind of on that borderline of that echo to the whistle. So they want to play with that. The defensive backs play that way too. So if you have a crew that's going to be more of a penalty calling type game, they're going to get called for it.
Someone was telling me that Adam Archuleta was praising the Titans' fourth down defense. I mean, they got stops, of course, but beyond that, like the scheme of what Dean Pease was doing on those fourth down attempts consistently well in that game. What did you notice?
You know, I think what especially on that one Kenny Vaccaro where he slanted and pinched inside and made that stop on the run play. You know, he beat two blockers on that play. There was a fullback in the backfield. Then there was a receiver that came in motion. Both of them had responsibility to clear that gap out, and neither one of them got to him. He was able to read the snap of the ball, get into the gap, and penetrate and make a tackle for a loss. You know, the Titans do a good job of, whether it's Rashawn Evans or Wesley Woodard at times when he's in the game in those situations, not as much the D line, but the safeties will get physical, definitely down in the box. That kind of plays into what Kenny likes to do too. But he did a really nice job of anticipating the snap count, slanting inside, and avoiding two blocks.
Jarrell Casey was showing up more in this game. What was the matchup like for him, and how did he take advantage?
You know, when the right guard went out with a concussion for the Falcons, they did a lot of slide protection where they slid their line. That plays right into what Jarrell Casey loves to do. He is going to read that, and he's going to get on the opposite side of that lineman sliding.
Use the leverage.
Run through the gap. It's what he does. It's the way he plays. He's got great balance. You know, he's always had the good feet. You know, we've seen some little issues with him rushing the passer more in a man-to-man, straight-up blocking scheme. But when they would slide that protection, he would jump the backside of the gap, run through the gap, and penetrate and make a play, whether it was in the run game or the pass. You know, I had him for actually 2 sacks in the game. I know he was credited with one, but he was in the backfield a lot and made some nice plays. And a lot of that was the way they were protecting up front for the Falcons.
Blake Bedingfield with us. The Titans are 1-5 in the last 6 division games, which is the biggest issue. But they're now 7-0 in games since like the 1st of December last year that are not division games. What is it about the uncommon opponent that allows them to play better football?
You know,
there's something to that now.
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, I think when you look in division, if you go back to last year more than this year, but you know, you were facing top quarterbacks, whether it was Deshaun Watson and Andrew Luck, not as much on the Jacksonville side, but you know, you look at, you're facing top quarterbacks, you know, 4 times a year.
Yeah.
Those are tough matchups. And plus the way the teams are built now, Houston has stars on defense. Indianapolis is building their roster with speed and athleticism on the defensive side, which are tough matchups 4 times a year. So, if you look on the other side, you know, you look at, I thought this game was going to be a tougher matchup for the Titans than it was because of the offensive personnel of the Falcons. But the way the Titans were able to take advantage of the offensive line, the way they were able to stop the run game and really hem up the receivers on the outside, the Falcons, you know, were left really with just kind of targeting their tight end for most of their big gains during the rest of the game. So they were able to take advantage of some of the lesser talented teams in the league.
We know Allen's status is in doubt here. How much has he grown since last year through the first 3 games of this year before he was knocked out?
You know, I'm not really going to say he's grown. You know, in this past game, he threw threw a number of picks, fumbled the ball. He was still throwing the ball in double coverage. This is a guy with a big arm, big body, big frame, has some athleticism as a runner, is a second leading rusher on their team. That's probably the thing he's still really good at, is avoiding and getting downfield. When the man-to-man coverage presses downfield, he will get a good gain. But he's still throwing into double coverage. You saw it in the New England game. He's still missing that robber. New England ran that robber defense a couple of times where the safety would come off a receiver and pick the ball. They did that a number of times, and he's still getting fooled by that. But, again, he is big and athletic, and he can get on a roll at times because of his arm strength. He's just not always – I don't think he's – I say not always, but, you know, right now he's just not a very accurate, consistently accurate quarterback. Now, they did add some of the personnel, which has helped him with the run game of Frank Gore. The offensive line does a solid job of protecting him. Even though he takes sacks, more of those sacks are him staying in the pocket like an athletic quarterback. You're going to start to see that in the NFL. I talk about that every week, whether it's a Mariota or a Watson or a Mayfield. These guys are going to take sacks, and not necessarily on the offensive line. They're trying to create with their athleticism, allow receivers to open up downfield and continue to make a play, and they take sacks that are more cover sacks than they are offensive line sacks. So, and he does that on a number of occasions.
What did you see from Matt Barkley? Did they change at all when he came in the game?
You know, he stayed in the pocket a little bit more. He's a little bit more adverse to running, a little bit more of a shorter intermediate passing game where Josh Allen can really stretch the field with his arm strength, especially with his receivers of a John Brown that has excellent vertical speed. You know, this is something that if he's not in the game, the vertical game is going to be taken away. You're going to see more of the short to intermediate, and you're going to see a lot of the run game. Now, the one player that's I think you'll see more of with a Matt Barkley is the Dawson Knox kid, a local Nashville kid that was drafted by Buffalo and has had
Brentwood
a really
Academy.
Nice Brentwood Academy, an excellent player that really is going to have a much better career in the NFL than he ever did in college for just lack of utilization sometimes at Ole Miss. But he's going to be a really nice outlet for Matt Barkley playing in his hometown this Sunday.
How did they bottle up Brady?
You know, a little bit of it was Brady. He looked off at times, but they were trying to take the run away. They disguised their blitzes. A lot of times they would have 6 and 7 at the line of scrimmage. They would drop 3, and they would drop them into coverage. And a lot of times Brady was just off in this game, the rare off times. But Brady also threw the ball almost 40 times in this game in a situation where they tried to run early. They were bottling up the run. They were able to run the ball a little bit late in the game, but really the run was stopped, and the Patriots tried to go exclusively to the pass, and they just had some issues. They really used James White in their passing game this past week, used more of the outlet passes. They were getting the linebacker on the running back, and that's, you know, Brady's always going to take those mismatches if he has those opportunities.
Let's flip back to A.J. Brown for a second. Everybody loves what you write at my site, but they want you to respond to something you wrote early about A.J. Brown, where you said, at his best, working inside routes, a bigger, more physical player who is easily covered up downfield because of lack of speed, could be inactive at times.
Yeah. So he played 24 snaps, which would say he was situational in this game. He had 3 catches. He caught an inside route for a touchdown that he took outside. Caught a fade route for a touchdown, which was a really nice physical one-on-one matchup. There are going to be times where A.J. Brown is going to have these opportunities. This game, Cleveland, you saw it. There are other games where he's not. And Jacksonville, where he's not going to be as active. Even in this game, the Titans didn't make him active. He was not on the field. So when you say there were 60-plus plays on offense and he was on the field for 24, somebody else was playing. So I'm saying he was situational. Situations just happened to be good when he was out there. And that's what's going to happen with a rookie receiver, especially someone that was used to lining up inside in college that is now playing on the outside more. But he's still better on the inside than he is out consistently. This was a little bit more of a softer coverage type team than it was versus Jacksonville, where they were in his face at the line of scrimmage and making him run precise routes and getting off that bump and run coverage. They didn't do that this week. They were playing more off man, and he was able to take advantage of that.
It's not going to be inactive, though.
It just depends. I mean, I you know, Tajay Sharp's kind of fallen to the back a little bit in this offense. Is he going to be inactive? We'll see how the rest of the season goes. We're just a quarter there. You know, right now I would say no. I mean, why would you make him inactive? I thought at times it would be more of a Tajay-type game. This is obviously, you know, when I thought they were going to have a vertical stretch guy with a Taywan Taylor, but that's not there either. So this is what they have on offense, and they're going to try to be you know, bigger on the outside, be more physical, and at certain games they'll have those opportunities like they did this week, and like games like Jacksonville, they won't.
As we wrap up the hour, give us some of the matchups you actually like with the Titans and Bills this week.
You know, I think what you're going to try to see is probably going back to what they did a little bit this past week with the Falcons. I think what you're going to see is Buffalo try to take away the run game. That's what the Falcons tried to do with Henry, is take away the run game, and that opened up the pass, obviously. But keep building on what you have offensively, letting Marcus do a lot of pre-snap reads, make him make the plays. You know, on the outside of the corner situation with the Buffalo Bills, they're not as big and physical. They have some savvy corners in Tre'Davious White and Levi Wallace, but not the big physical going to be more of a press. They're going to have to play off on these big physical receivers. I would think you're probably going to have a little bit more of Adam Humphries in this game. I keep waiting for him to kind of break out, and I think this is a game where he could do that. You know, I think on the other side of the ball, the corner matchup, you know, they have the vertical receiver in John Brown. Who's going to have that matchup? Where is it going to be a Dory Jackson that's going to run with him downfield? You know, who's going to be the quarterback? I think that's going to be real important. You know, if Josh Allen's there, he can sling it downfield. If Matt Barkley, you're going to see more of a ball control type offense. So I think the Titans will try to take away Frank Gore if Barkley's there and let everything play out.
Blake, always great to see you. Always great information.